Hi, and welcome to the Contemporary Arts Show on Radio Reverb, Brighton's community radio station, 97.2 FM, www.radioreverb.com. The music you just heard was the Canadian experimental turntablist Mark Hansen with Once Held a Light in the High in the Sky from the album At Every Point and the Tude Records. I'm Alistair Kemp, and with me in the studio today are Louise Bristow and Mark Hewitt, who are part of the Floor Plan exhibition at the Phoenix Gallery starting in September. We'll have an interview with them in a moment, but first listings for the next month, or rather a selection of delectable cultural morsels. First off, and the influence behind me playing the music you just heard, is a show called Works for Turntable at the Permanent Gallery on Bedford Place, running from the 22nd of August until the 20th of September. The works are based on adapted turntables using found objects placed on the turntables and string, rubber bands and other such things attached to the arms to create a sculptural barrier to produce sound, highlighting the tonal and timbral differences between the acoustic and electric. A 7-inch single has been commissioned with additional text by The Wire's Anne Hilda Nesset and is available for purchase. I mean, that's at the Permanent Gallery on Bedford Place, running from the 22nd of August to 20th of September. At Inked on North Road, there is the continuation of the Zachary Walsh exhibition, which is figurative paintings using Greek mythology to portray people the artist has a relationship with. This exhibition continues until the 23rd of August, so I'm not sure if you listen to the Wednesday repeat in the morning, it may have finished. But then on the 10th of September until 4th October is a group show called Made in Brighton, featuring well-known or up-and-coming Brighton-based artists. I'll quickly list them and then you'll get the idea. They are James Courtney, Graham Carter, Modern Toss, Ben Allen, Hutch, Chris Kettle, Pinky, Andy Doig, Imbue, Screen Prince, Maria Rivens, Mishfit, Sean Madden, Rec, Jim Saunders and Terrorist. That's T, brackets, error, brackets, ist. And that's at the Inked Gallery on North Road from the 10th of September. At the Fairtrade Gallery on Montague Place, there is the photography of Steve Gullick from the August the 6th, so which is now on. I'm afraid I have no more information on that. At the Brighton Media Centre on Middle Street, there is a continuing exhibition, Negritude, which carries on until September the 5th. This is the work by Robbie Robb to raise money for two charities involved with working in Africa called GUA, G-U-A, Africa and Living Brush. The works are portraits of children from the Democratic Republic of Congo and luminaries from the jazz and hip-hop worlds. And if I'm right, the portraits of children supports Living Brush and the luminaries from the jazz and hip-hop worlds supports GUA Africa, but it might be the other way around, forgive me if I've got that the wrong way around. At the Phoenix Gallery, running from the 5th of September till the 11th of October, is Floor Plan. It's the exhibition exploring buildings and architecture and the physical, aesthetic and psychological interactions between these structures, their inhabitants and the surrounding communities. We have two of the participants in the studios with us, Louise and Mark Hewitt, who will be talking to us later. But the other artists are Peter Bobby, Rosalind David, Rowena Easton, who works with Mark Hewitt, and Jane Ward and Rich White. At Art at 5 from the 5th to the 20th of September is Dreamscapes, showcasing the works of Nick Vivian, Kim Anson and Yvonne Kuma. It captures the magic enchantment of the natural world through real imagined spaces, and again I have little more information on that. And lastly, in the art world, there's a continuing exhibition at Fabrica which finishes on the 31st of August, when the artist John Gray will take the last of the sculptures, those that have not already decayed already, down to the seafront. He'll be doing this at 8 in the morning, weather permitting, and according to Fabrica, people are welcome to just turn up and join the procession. That should be good fun, if you're up at that time. I would just like to mention a few shows at the Nightingale Theatre by the station, which is up by the station, above the pub on the corner. On Wednesday the 9th of September at 7 p.m. there's the Useful Knowledge to Know, which is by Clara Deshery and Chris Ely. It's reinventing the lecture, how does a performance turn into a chaotic disaster, on the challenging task of providing both random and crucially important information. Tickets are £8.50 and £6.50 from the Dome box office. Then at the same theatre, Nightingale Theatre, there is You Fancy Yourself. by Marja Ardell on Thursday the 10th of September, which is a hilarious and poignant tale in the world of playground politics and childhood loyalties set in 1950s Scotland. Tickets are again £8.50, £6.50 from the Dome box office. In dance we have the New Venture Theatre. There's Intimate Encounters, choreographed by Saskia Ulrika Schilling, which is from the 4th to the 6th September. It's an interactive performance installation exploring the concept of intimacy. Each performance is unique and the performance involves extreme darkness and physical contact with the performers. So that should be interesting. There's a staggered entrance throughout the evening and each performance lasts about 45 minutes. That's at the New Venture Theatre on the between the 4th and the 6th of September. And finally, my I only have two, I'm afraid. Musical tips for the month are 65 Days of Static at Digital on September the 10th with tickets £8, although they are playing the Best of All the next day if you're going to that. Then there is AU at the Free Butt on the September the 12th. Please phone them, not me, for prices. Right, in a short while we shall have a long waiting interview with Louise Bristow and Mark Hewitt about the Floor Plan exhibition at the Phoenix Gully. First, here is some music. This is Luther Thomas from 1973. That was Luther Thomas and the Human Arts Ensemble from the album Banana on Unheard Music. The track was Banana. This is the Contemporary Arts Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, www.radioreverb.com. With me in the studio are Louise Bristow, an artist, and Mark Hewitt, a writer, involved with the Phoenix Gallery show Floor Plans starting on the 5th of September. Hi, guys. Can you tell me first what the aim of the whole show is? According to the Phoenix Gallery, the show explores buildings, architecture, and the physical, aesthetic, and psychological interactions between these structures, their inhabitants, and surrounding communities. Can you tell me more about it?
Well, I think partly the show came up as an idea to do something about architecture, because the building itself that Phoenix is in, Phoenix, the organisation, has got quite a lot of plans for refurbishment of the building. So it was to kind of highlight the building itself, the fabric of the building, because I think, you know, people see you pass it by and you don't know what's going on in there. Mm. And so to sort of make people to think about architecture in general, but architecture of that building particularly.
Yes, well, Karen Morey, the curator at the Phoenix, put out a call for submissions, and various people sent in ideas for projects on architectural themes. That the work is fairly diverse, but all of the contributors seem to have an interest in the relationship between buildings and people, or buildings and human psychology, and that's really the sort of show that has emerged from the submissions that were received.
Okay, that's interesting, we should say we're talking about architecture, but it is an art exhibition.
Yeah. Mm.
But what you're talking about is human psychology, the interaction between buildings and people and stuff like that.
There's a lot of artists now that are using architecture as a central theme in their work. And it's a big area of development in contemporary art, I would say.
Yeah, I think artists and architects have always been closely linked for centuries. Mm. And that those roles have often kind of interlaced and switched over. And maybe, I mean, I was trying to think about this before today, thinking why are so many artists, because I'm one of them, interested in architecture. I mean, I make very, very small work, but I wonder if it's to do with scale, that architecture, a lot of artists work on larger scale, and the installation as a form, maybe that's something that interests artists working
well. I think for most people it's a big part of your life. We spend a lot of our time in buildings. We're walking in and out of buildings, we're looking at buildings, we're surrounded by buildings, our lives are to some extent ordered and conditioned by the nature of the buildings that exist around us, so it's natural to get interested in that subject, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think, how it entered into my work, just by partly through that, by being your surroundings just seep in whether you want them to or not.
Mm. Okay, because I was going to ask, because you were talking about artists being influenced by architecture.
Yeah.
And of course, there are evidently going to be architectures who are influenced by art, but how that flow, which way does it go, do you think? Oh, I suppose you're talking from the artistic point of view, you can't talk from the architect's point of view, but...
It goes both ways, I'm sure it does, I can't see how it wouldn't. I mean, in my own work, I'm really interested in the way that applied art and design can symbolise... Well, the zeitgeist, or a particular social aspirations, like modernism, is full of hope for this new utopia.
Yeah,
the imagined utopia, or classical buildings refer to classical thought and sort of grandeur of and power,
For my own contribution to the exhibition, I'm working with another artist, Rowena Easton, and I think we both have very different trajectories as regards our interest in architecture. We've both been producing work either through text or in other forms that have explored architecture in various ways. But I think we're both interested in extremities to do with architecture, so we're interested in buildings in a deranged state, we're interested in derangement in relation to buildings, I'm personally, I mean, the particular focus of our work is to do with buildings as they occur in dreams and buildings as they influence dreams, and the way in which spaces, like this studio, in fact, which has a quite intense, focused, claustrophobic almost atmosphere, is the sort of thing that can linger in the back of my psyche when I leave this space. And when I think about this interview again, I will suddenly have this sense of this room around me, and that's the sort of thing that we're trying to evoke in this.
I guess it's actually affecting this interview.
But I, when you were talking about that, I mean, this is not to do with my work at all, but is that I, when I read a book, a novel, there is a number of spaces from my real life that make that I envisage when I read a novel, and it's weird. One of them is the kitchen where I used to babysit as a teenager. Okay. And it wasn't my own kitchen, but you know, do you know what I mean? When I'm reading a novel and it might be set in someone's house, there are a number of spaces that come up as those spaces.
So are you talking to say, if you're reading in the book, there's a kitchen, you think of that kitchen?
Yeah.
Not the fact that you're reading the book and then you're reading in that kitchen.
No. I think that's where I picture the action taking place. And I hadn't thought of it until you started talking about the idea of dreams and spaces and how they lodge in your mind somehow. And how
there's a really interesting selection of work that looks to be coming up in this exhibition. It's quite varied. It's six different contributors all seem to have completely different approaches, but all of the work to me looks really interesting, and some of it is exploring architecture in a broader sense, whereas some of it is particularly focusing on the Phoenix Gallery and that area of Brighton. And I think that area of Brighton is really interesting. I think that whole left side, east side of Grand Parade, but I think probably east side of Grand Parade has a strange atmosphere. I always think it has a strange atmosphere, and the last time that I was in the gallery looking out, the interaction between the passing cars and what's happening inside a building is interesting, and I'm interested in it as a space.
That side is a combination of students and low cost housing, isn't it, which makes whereas the other side is shops and offices and pubs.
But the whole energy of the road going down along to the Steen is
the shape's different.
Is sometimes slightly unnerving. There's something about that side of that road is slightly unnerving, I think, personally.
Although I haven't been to Phoenix Gallery more often recently, I'm actually getting a bit more fond of it. If I can ask each of you individually now about your particular project, and if I can turn to you first, Louise. You construct sets from objects that you make yourself, including those sort of building models used in architectural design. Then once you set up this sort of construct, you paint it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've called them stage sets to try and explain to people who've never seen the work what they are. I mean, I've said they're reminiscent of stage sets, but they're like kind of three-dimensional collages. And in order to... I mean, I make them three-dimensional like that in order to then paint them. And the finished piece is, they're quite small paintings made with gouache paint, which is kind of like poster paint, water-based paint. And it's quite a chalky paint. And it's, to me, it's the kind of paint that graphic designers used to use in the past. So it's not a very high art, kind of fine art paint. And so I suppose when I make these constructions and collages, I'm bringing together all sorts of different images. Some of them are three-dimensional images, so they are models of buildings or parts of buildings that I have made. And sometimes they're pages from books. I've got lots of books on travel. I'm particularly interested in Eastern Europe. And so I put these... It's almost like creating a landscape around these three-dimensional architectural elements and then paint them. And because they're painted, I suppose you're not always aware of what you're looking at. Whereas with a photograph, I think a photograph would give too much away.
Right.
You'd be able to see too clearly what it is you're looking at because you trust that it's real to a degree still.
Yeah, to an extent.
Whereas with painting, I suppose they're slightly more... sort of fantastical or kind of surreal. And there's a thing that goes on, I think, maybe with scale, that is interesting in the painting, so, without wanting to tell
you're
people.
You're
how
aware
to
there's a sort of imagination in there as opposed to just the set representation of working
And there is an ambiguity, I suppose, in them. Or there's not a. I mean, when I put the constructions together, the collage together, I am kind of telling myself a story about how these elements link together, and they have to make sense to me, but it's not a story that I could particularly tell anyone. I mean, it works on one level, it works visually, it has to work right visually, and there have to be connections with the different elements, maybe in their meanings for me, but I'm aware that it's a very personal meaning. It's not something that I would expect anyone else to understand in the same way that I do, but nevertheless I hope that they are interested in them and it gets them excited looking at the work. You know.
And you don't always have to get the same thing from the artist.
Oh, absolutely not. No, very unlikely that you ever do, really.
Okay, because you mentioned East Europe and your interest in East Europe and stuff, and you say in your biography that you have an interest in ideology. And in fact, the statement is that you are excited by everyday things and how they express bigger ideas. Graffiti on a street wall expresses one person's political dissent, whereas the design image of, for example, a tiny postage stamp can encapsulate an entire nation's ruling ideology. I've come across this sometimes in your book. How does this tie in with your work and most of all with architecture in this exhibition?
Well, I suppose a bit like what I mentioned before, how architecture, particularly because it is buildings are so important to us, then architecture has often been used to tell messages to the society that it's been built in, you know, about that society. Terrible at explaining this, but. I mean, like a very, very, like War Memorials, pieces of architecture. Yeah. They've obviously got a very, very clear message. And why do most war memorials of the 19th century look so similar? You know, a man on a horse.
Yeah.
Whereas then they begin to change in design and say something, you know, it'd be very unlike. I mean, actually, Anthony Gormley in the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square is an interesting idea of what. Because people don't know what to put on that last plinth, and so the idea of a war memorial is no longer sits easy with us. So all I'm saying, really, and really rambling, is that cultural artifacts, things that get designed by people, tell us a huge amount about the society that they've been made in, and architecture is just one part of that. And so I really, I mean, I love modernism and modernist architecture because it's to me it's very beautiful, and it says so much sort of about optimism for this kind of utopian future.
Because I was going to ask something about that I thought about was because with especially with modernism and architecture and the ideas of ideology was Louis Sullivan's famous form follows function. And I just wondered, sort of like you said, even in everyday objects without meaning to, form adheres to ideology. And I mean, does that suggest that there's a link between ideology and function, or is it the functionalism was merely the ideology of modernism?
Well, that's probably a good way of putting it about modernism, that to a large extent, functionalism was, to an extent, the ideology of modernism, in that, but I'm just really with that saying that everything is designed, and if you think you've got a neutral object, you know, like my watch is neutral and is not designed, then it isn't, it's, you know, no, why does it look... Even, you know, it's unnecessarily decorative, the band that goes around my wrist. It's got more on it than it needs to. And there's a beauty about very functional, simple objects. And I'm also interested in the more kind of bizarre things, like textile designs from the Soviet Union after the revolution that have got repeat patterns of tractors on them, or missiles, you know, and these were textile designs for women's dresses, but they've got a tractor right across it, and because that was what they were interested in, was building a new country through their farming and whatever, you know.
Which I was going to say was perhaps their dreams.
Which is going to
bring me across.
What a link! What a link!
Which is, if I can turn to you, I mean, you're a writer. For this show, you're collaborating with the artist Rowena Easton.
Rowena is also what I would call an art writer as well. She's someone who is in fact studying using text as within an art, fine art discipline, rather than within a literary discipline. I'd probably come more loosely from a writing for performance background, but Rowena is definitely using writing as within a fine art context.
Okay. And as the link suggested, your personal interest is around dreams, and specifically dreams of buildings. Is that right? And in this collaboration, is that something you're engaged with?
We're both very interested in the relationship between buildings and psychology, and the way in which buildings affect the subconscious. And for myself, there was a time a couple of years back, where I had a few dreams in a row where I noticed that the building was the protagonist. So I'd be having a dream, then I'd walk into a building, and then something odd would start happening because I'd walked into a building. And quite often, the buildings are unreliable, unpredictable, generally involve parts to the building that are suddenly discovered and that suddenly take you into a different place. And so I started noting these down. And then developed another project where I invited people, particularly people I knew at the time to begin with, to send me their own dreams with buildings in. And I collected this as a sort of library, and it's still a growing library. So if there's anyone listening who has good recollections of dreams that they've experienced involving a building, we'd really like to hear about them, and we can potentially include them in the material that gets generated for the exhibition.
Do you want to give an address for people to get in contact with you for that?
Yeah. I suppose the best thing is my email address, which is mark@mchblank, that's mchblank.co.uk. And we'd really like to receive stuff, but you can also bring it into the exhibition as well. You can we'll have some cards there, and people can go into the exhibition, write it down, drop it into a little mailbox. But what we're planning for the exhibition is bits of text which might be things that have been sent to us, or it might be things which have been sent to us that we've then gone inside, re-inhabited and changed, or taken further, because they also did become landscapes and dramatic scenarios that can be explored in other ways. So we hope to do that, and we also want to do some work with objects, partly dependent on a little bit of funding for materials, but we also want to have objects in the space which also mirror the contents of the text, and that they will similarly to what you find in dreams, they will be misleading objects.
Okay.
Misleading indicators of whatever. We don't know. So okay. You have to go and see.
Yeah, I mean that sounds interesting. I mean, I was wondering, because you reinterpret these dreams that other people bring to you.
Sometimes we'll just leave them as dreams. But I started just recently. There are some bits of text that had been sent to us, and I started going through it, and then I wanted to, because I am a writer as well, I wanted to change the wording. And once I started changing the wording, it started becoming my dream, and I changed gender. I became another gender in this dream, and I was starting to, the more I changed the words, the more I felt as though the situation that was taking place in the dream became mine. I started to take a sort of ownership over it. Okay. It became more real. And so we're exploring that revisiting of these narratives.
I mean, that's interesting that you found yourself doing that, because I was thinking, because I had a look on your website, which is mchblank.co.uk, And it has, and I think you've got some dreams to read out, haven't you?
Yeah, but I've got. I could.
And I found reading them was that you could sort of see what these some of these buildings might represent.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether there was actually a theme to the way these buildings, or was each dream individual? The way the buildings were treated seemed to be individual to each different dream or person who had the dream, or was there more sort of collective idea of what these buildings are, which might explain why you started taking on.
I think you get categories. You get categories of experience. So a lot of people will talk about a place that they go to in their dreams quite frequently, and it's partly related to somewhere that they knew in their past. But then when they go there in their dreams, they find that there's another bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at one this morning where they go to this place and it's all very neat and quite grand. But then every time they're there, they discover some completely ramshackle other bit, and it's a new discovery, and it means something very personally to them.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who's a writer who goes to the same house in her dreams very, very often, and then there's this very rickety stairway right at the top of this, which is incredibly dangerous for her to get to this her favourite room in there, which she feels as though the room where she creates all her best work, and it involves the danger to get to the goal.
Okay. Would you like to read? Well, probably have maybe one or two. Would you like to read out some of these dreams so people have an idea about?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Well, I've got one here that I've been revisiting.
Okay.
And I'll read you some of that. It was when my son raced into the flat, leaving the door open, that things started to shift. I was in the front room and looked round, surprised, as he ran down the corridor and shut himself into his bedroom. For some reason, I had the feeling or fear he was being pursued by a knife gang. I ran out of the flat and scurried up the stairs that lead to the next floor of our block, shouting, "What do you want? What do you want?" But there was no one there. I came back down, and as I was approaching the front door, I noticed another door next to it. This door was smaller than a normal one, more like a cupboard or larder or cellar door, with holes in it for ventilation. It was slightly ajar, with light coming from within. I became aware of a small girl standing next to me, holding onto my dress. She was clearly frightened. I don't know why. I felt like her mother, or at least protective towards her. I pushed the small door and peered inside. Clearly it was someone's residence. There was a corridor similar to the one in my flat, but dimly lit with a naked bulb at the far end and illuminating a few storage shelves, all dusty and cobwebbed. There was wood panelling along the walls, and I noticed a cupboard under the stairs. I stood in the corridor holding the girl's hand and called out again, "What do you want?" Then I heard footsteps and saw first the feet and legs, then the body and face of a short, stocky man as he descended to the foot of the stair and walked along the corridor towards me. He was middle-aged, receding grey hair cut short, a vest. He looked as if he'd been caught off duty or just got out of bed, some sort of keeper or butler or messenger, I thought. He was holding a bunch of keys. As he approached, I retreated backwards with the girl, feeling I'd intruded on his territory. In the end, I backed right out of the flat, but he came out after me and stood there, looking me in the face. I made as if to ask again, "What do you want?" But my mouth was somehow full of glue. That's how I'd describe it, glued up. I couldn't form any words. The man in the vest opened his mouth. I was shocked to see he had no tongue. He too was unable to speak and desired to demonstrate this, at the same time conveying to me with his eyes that he understood my predicament, that he understood the sense I was unable to articulate. I knew I had touched something not of this world. So that's an extract of a dream which has been revisited and re-inhabited, and which the more I've gone into it, I feel as though it's pulling me in. It has the strange quality of pulling you in. One of the things I want to do while I'm in preparation for the exhibition, actually, is to spend spent a night or two at the Phoenix Gallery overnight to see, right. probably eating a lot of cheese before yeah. before I settle down into my sleeping bag to see what emerges from that place as a storehouse of, I suppose, a psychic possibility.
Okay, well, if anyone's interested in what Mark makes of that, the exhibition starts on the 5th of September, and now it's for the both of you have an opportunity to do this now. This is the point. This is the part where you encourage the listeners to come along to your show. It's the point where you can promote it. And so, you either want to take it in turns or between you, give and try and encourage people for the other exhibitors as well as.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing the other exhibitors.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, there is, and the poster for it, and there's the leaflet that is the new leaflet from Phoenix, which is out at the moment. It has got the work of Peter. No, it's not Peter. But Rich. No, Jane Ward. Jane Ward, who makes these really meticulously constructed works using digital photos. But I really like the piece that's on the cover, but it looks kind of post-apocalyptic, like there's been, you know, Armageddon and this is the result, which maybe is not incredibly inviting, but I think it's a really powerful image. Yeah, too right. It's a really powerful image, so I'm looking forward to seeing. I've no idea what the scale of her work will be. It looks like it will be big. So there's artists from different parts of the country taking part. So Mark is someone we know each other. But most of the other artists, I don't think I know their work at all. So I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great array of stuff. And I think that you'll also find there's quite a few interventions into the actual space itself to create spaces within the space. I think there's as well as very interesting material to look at and in our case to read, there will also be different ways of experiencing being within that building related to the different projects that people are undertaking with it.
So, quickly, why should they come?
Because it'd be really interesting work and it'll make you look at your surroundings in a different way. I can imagine it will. You'll walk out of there and you'll look at the buildings around you slightly differently, perhaps.
Brilliant.
They will want to come because they too are fascinated by architecture and the effect it has on them in the same way that we are, and especially if they live within the area. I think it would be nice to have people come in who live in that area and who can, certainly for our part of the exhibition, contribute material that gives what's in that exhibition a local flavour and a sense of the experience of local people in relation to that building, which... You know, it's a great big thing that's there that we walk by all the time.
I was going to say, what would you describe its architectural style then?
60s office block.
Yeah.
Painted blue. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Louise.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to the Contemporary Arts Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, which is also on www.radioreverb.com. If you want to get in touch, please email studio@radioreverb.com and put Contemporary Arts Show in the subject heading. The next track is Paul D. Miller, aka DJ Spooky the Subliminal Kid, from the compilation album An Anthology of Noise and Electronic Music, Volume 1. I hope to be with you again on Sunday, 20th September, hopefully with the author Dominic Fox promoting his book Cold World. Check out his blog Poetics at http://code Poetics, spelt poetics, spelt poetix. And see you next month. Thank you. Goodbye.
Warning.